Hey, Niles.
Maris found a gray hair.
Daphne, get Niles a brandy.
It was right at the apex of her widow's peak.
Better bring the bottle.
She blames me, Dad. She said it's from the stress I caused her last night when I thoughtlessly turned on the light while she was getting undressed.
And that's from, obviously, from Frasier. And think in your own life, when you looked in the mirror and you saw things you didn't like. It could be a gray hair. I remember seeing my first gray hair. I was at Brown University, and I had been out of college only a year or two. And it's like, no, this can't really be a gray hair. No, I'm seeing things. And how do we cope with those types of situations where you get some tangible evidence that you may not feel on track in your own life, that you're getting older, which we all are, but that you're not getting older happily and you want to turn that around. You can call me and ask me any questions that are on your mind, whether it's not wanting your spouse to see you in the dark, to see you in the light, but it's okay to see you in the dark because I can't see you, or, you know, being unhappy with your body or being too particular about your body. Maybe you have a perfectly good body, but you don't feel that way inside. And, you know, how do you make those changes in your life? I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner. My show's The Rational Basis of Happiness. You can call me now with any question that you would want to ask a clinical psychologist or a counselor or a therapist. I'm a clinical psychologist. My number's toll free, 1-877-DR-KENNER. That's toll free, 1-877-DR-KENNER. And right now, let's turn to the phones. Anna, you're having difficulty with your daughter or son?
My son, my 16-year-old son.
16-year-old son. Tell me what's going on.
Well, he's unable to focus in class. He's a very bright boy. He doesn't give the teachers any disciplinary problems or anything, but he just seems to not pay attention, and he seems to, you know, every night he comes home, he tells us he doesn't have any homework, and lo and behold, he's just not doing it.
So he's lying.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. And the teacher tells us she moves him to the front of the class, and occasionally he'll come in and ask for help at lunchtime. But he's still, he's failing, and he's very, very bright.
How old is he?
He's 16.
Oh, 16. And in what grade?
He's a junior in high school.
A junior in high school. So these years, all years are critical, but these years are really, really critical. Because does he want to go on to college?
Well, he says he does, but he doesn't seem to. He has a brother away at college. But I don't think he realizes what he has to put out effort to get there. And I'm not sure where to go from here. He's not a bad kid. I don't have any, as I said, disciplinary problems at school or anything. He just isn't focusing, isn't doing the work. But when he does focus, he just really stand out.
Okay, I want to ask you that in a second. Could you speak up a little bit? I'm having a little difficulty hearing you.
Oh, sure.
So let me sum up what I'm hearing so far is that you've got a really good kid, and for some reason in his junior year, he's 16 years old, and his school isn't grabbing his attention. He's not focusing on it. He isn't one of those kids that tries to capture every word that the teacher says. He'd rather sit in the back of the class, and she embarrasses him, moves him to the front of the class, and he's not a defiant kid. Do you think he's doing any drugs or alcohol or anything?
No.
So really good kid, but just kind of lost, just unfocused?
Yeah, exactly. Not focused, not interested, or I just can't see. I don't know if his mind is wandering. I'm not even sure. I don't know what to do to motivate him.
Wonderful. What do you typically do? Is Dad in the house also?
Yes.
What do either of you do to motivate him?
We've been threatening him.
Okay, I'm your son. I'm going to be your son.
Okay.
Let me get a flavor of what you say to me.
Okay.
The tone of voice you use.
Okay. Victor, if you're not going to get this done, you're not going anywhere this weekend, or we're going to take the phone away, or no computer, or, we do, it's punishment, basically.
Not again. I can't believe they're doing it. Just get off my back. I'm 16 years old. Can't I do this on my own? I don't have any motivation to do anything, and they can't force me to do it.
Oh, geez.
That's what went through my mind. So the parent is thinking, oh, good, I'm giving them like an alarm clock, a little wake-up call, a gentle nudge, and some motivation by punishment. And, you know, they really want to use the computer, so it'll kick them into action. But that's not what goes into through the child's mind. Think of your own childhood. Were you one of these really good kids who did everything?
Or no.
There was a little tension in the house?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me how Mom tried to motivate you.
Well, Mom was non-English speaking and didn't really tune in to, and just assumed I was getting everything done at school.
So she was passive. She's off in the ether. How about Dad?
Same.
So you were on your own?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, you didn't have the rebellious thing. Here's what, see, as a kid, I want my mom to be my friend. I want my dad to be my friend. I have been shocked as a therapist when I get really rebellious kids, and I mean with the chains and the tattoos and the piercings and everything, and it's like, oh, I just wish I were closer to Dad. And it's like, you got to be kidding. You've been fighting him. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And we don't give kids enough credit that they want to connect, but they don't know how, and they don't like what's offered them as a means of connecting. So we need a different language, a different way of addressing our kids. And typically it's the way we address people that are not in the family that we love, a friend. You wouldn't tell a friend, I'm going to take away your computer if you don't get your homework done.
No, that's true.
What would you say to a good friend who just feels stuck and is not, needs to get a report done for work and just isn't doing it?
Yeah, I'd sit down and have a heart-to-heart and, you know.
Would you listen to her?
Yeah.
And would you let her find her own solution?
Yeah.
Fascinating. 16-year-old kids can find their own solutions. So I'm going to recommend a book by my favorite authors. I think it's the gold standard of parenting. If I didn't have these books, I would have been an awful parent, Anna. I would have done the punishment. I would have done the crying, and I would have done everything else imaginable to try to get my kids to do what I want them to do, which I know is right for them. But it's not right for them unless they know for themselves that it's right for them. So being a good listener is wonderful. The name of the book, if you haven't heard of it, it's How to Talk So Teens Will Listen.
Okay.
It's by Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch. We'll put it on the website today if it's not already up on it. It's a relatively new book in the last couple of years. They have another book on my website, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, and How to Talk So Kids Will Learn and Listen. So they're wonderful, wonderful people. Here are some of their tips. When you listen to your child, rather than you make yourself not the enemy, but you gain a lot more understanding of your child. It could be that, Mom, I don't have any skills to study. I don't know how to do this. You know, other people just seem to have it. Well, then it's a matter of skill building. Or, my mind keeps wandering to Julie. I really like Julie. And then what I would try to do is motivate by values, not by duty, guilt, and fear.
Okay.
And by motivating by values is I will ask kids who come in to see me, I will say, what do you want to be when you get out of school? And they start telling me what their interests are. And I don't care whether their interests are in sports or in business or wanting to be in the theater. I say, what will help you open those doors? What will help you achieve those goals? And they eventually will say, good grades. Okay, they made that integration. They made that connection. That's the valuable link, because then that will help them do better. I never studied harder in my life than when I wanted to get into grad school. So listen, I wish you a lot of success with that. Listen to him. Be there as if he were a friend. And that doesn't mean to be a pushover as a parent. It means to be empathic. And I think you'll love that book. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Dr. Kenner.
I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner on The Rational Basis of Happiness.
Here's an excerpt from The Selfish Path to Romance, the Serious Romance Guidebook by clinical psychologist Dr. Ellen Kenner and co-author Dr. Edwin Locke.
Compatible personalities are crucial to romance. Being compatible does not mean being identical. It means that the partners do not constantly clash, but make each other happy on a daily basis. Nor is it the case that opposites necessarily attract. This may be true of some traits, but not others. An introverted man might enjoy the way an extroverted woman brings him out of his shell, while an extroverted man might feel at peace with a quiet, self-contained woman. On the other hand, many people prefer partners with similar personalities. People who are adventurous, for example, usually prefer partners who are the same.
You can download Chapter 1 for free by going to drkenner.com. And you can buy The Selfish Path to Romance at amazon.com.